On this episode, we talk to UX designer at Booking.com, Josh Story.
And immigrating to Amsterdam.
Thunder! 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 Thunder!
Welcome to the Thunder Nerds, where we urge you not to let the sadness of the swamps get you. This is J.D. Riot.
And I am Frederick Philip Von Weiss, and you are listening to the Thunder Nerds, a design and developer discussion for all levels in the industry that love what they do and do web good. A little bit of a never-ending story today.
Saddest scene in the entire movie.
I cried a little bit. I'd say like a little bitch.
Yeah, I would say so too. Because, I mean, the horse, like, you cared more about the horse than you did about the main character. Like, and at that point, it was just like a try you and that horse.
Speaking of never-ending story, that's a nice segue to go into our guest today, UX designer at Booking.com, Josh Story. Welcome, Josh.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Very good.
Thanks for being on the show today, Josh.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Let's talk a little bit about you and get some context for everybody. You and myself met a little while ago working at the same company in Tampa. From there, you got a new position across the world at Booking.com.
Yeah, after I left the company where I met you in Tampa, I actually ended up working at another company in Lakeland, Florida for a few years. And you know, about 6 months ago, I think, I got contacted by Booking's recruiting team, and they asked if I would, you know, be interested in doing some phone interviews, some online kind of design challenges, that sort of thing, leading up to them having me fly out to Amsterdam for an interview. So that was kind of the beginnings of it. Turned out, you know, when I got there for the interview, they liked what they saw, and they offered me a job.
Did they just reach out to you, have a few phone calls, or did you have to do some Skype interviews? What was that like?
It was kind of a mixture of things. Mostly Skype interviews at first. At one point, there was like some technical challenge stuff that I had to do with some of their team in later rounds of interviews. But it was all mostly, you know, it was all remote, of course, except for the final interview, mostly via Skype and then the occasional phone call.
It definitely shows their level of interest in you if you're going to have an interview where they fly you to Amsterdam from the United States.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine so. I know that, you know, they seem to be growing pretty quickly, so it's probably nothing new for them to be seeking out people from all over.
Yeah, that's very true. Do you speak a little Dutch? Is that what they speak over there?
Dutch. I only speak enough to know when and to get off the metro right now. that's just through trial and error. I've learned a little bit of things, just kind of picking up, going through stores and that sort of stuff, of course, or reading signs. But I am actually going to be taking some Dutch courses in a few weeks. It's like a 6-week course that I'll be taking, so I'm pretty excited about that.
Is that a mandatory thing, or is that part of what you want to do just because of the investment you're making in this new life?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not mandatory. It's definitely something that I want to do, A, just so it makes it, you know, a little easier to get around and do things. You know, everybody here speaks English for the most part, but there are those situations where at least knowing a little bit of Dutch would certainly come in handy. And then the other part of it, too, is it's all part of the experience, right? So, you know, moving out to Amsterdam, touring the Netherlands, seeing all kinds of things around Holland, I think it's appropriate to at least take a shot at learning the local language, because hopefully I'll be here for a while.
Well, yeah, your immersion's the best part, yeah.
It's paramount to be able to say, what kind of brownie is that?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, especially there.
Yeah, although I think you always know the answer, so.
You do.
Yeah.
And you expect the answer.
Right.
For real.
So what's the culture like over at Booking?
I mean, it's very interesting. My first day just kind of walking around, there's so many people there. It very much feels like, you know, your first day at school or something. I mean, there's so many people. people from all over the world, of course. It's a very interesting experience, just being there, not even, you know, getting to the part of actually doing any design work. Just walking around, it's such a huge building in such a central part of town. It's very bustling, very, very new experience for me. I'm generally, you know, used to working in kind of corporate offices that are, you know, in much quieter areas.
Yeah, it must be such a alien experience to go from the corporate America world, especially how well we value design, how much we don't value design, depending on that culture. But over there, especially at this company, it must be such a design-focused experience.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they definitely place a lot of value on design and its benefits. I think that also a lot of their focus really is customer-focused in almost every sense of the word, which, I mean, inevitably comes back to, you know, design thinking, because that's kind of what it's all about for the experienced design team. You know, so as long as it's something that benefits the customer or the end user, you know, that's really what they can get behind. So, you know, that lines up really well with the work that designers generally do, and really everybody for that matter. But, you know, specifically for my position, that's kind of been my observation.
Yeah, it's always nice when a company allows you to design or allows you to even work within the realms of like making the interaction between, you know, customer and product easier, that lean thinking aspect, you know what I mean? Not sure. Like we're doing this for no reason. We're doing this for a very specific reason based on this data, or our customers saying this, and that. You know, I work for a company that does something very similar, but in a completely different realm. And it's just, it's nice to be empowered like that.
Yeah, for sure.
You must feel like you've won the UX job super lotto to get transferred from America to this amazing place.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I think that until like maybe the second week I was here, which this is the end of my second week, I'm only now starting to kind of actually realize that this is like a thing that I'm doing. It very much at first was just kind of this surreal experience where like, you know, wasn't really sure if I actually was here or not for moments. It was just like, is this the place that I'm living now? And it's very surreal too, especially because, you know, I've always lived in Florida up until this point. So it's a huge change in every sense of the word, really.
Sure, between jet lag and the whole new experience, the whole new landscape, people speaking a different language.
Yes.
Really want you to splice in a whole new world.
I wish I knew some more lyrics.
Yeah, exactly.
But between that and the brownies, it must be just like you said, unreal.
Totally.
No, I think we might have caught up in certain states to Amsterdam as far as edibles go. I mean, like,
sure, there's Seattle.
Yeah, well, Seattle, California, Colorado are probably the two biggest.
Sure.
As far as all that goes, you know, what is it? Like, Seattle is Colorado or Seattle's like our Amsterdam, I guess.
Yeah.
It's a good bag of popcorn over there.
Yeah, I think so. I've been to Denver, and it definitely seems to have kind of the same saturation as far as like shops and dispensaries that are around. Mm-hmm. I will say, you know, it's all focused on like coffee shops and stuff. So it's just like a place you go into and just kind of hang out. That's of course just what I've seen walking by. You know, I think it's as prevalent as some other areas, but it's not really emphasized heavily from what I've kind of found. Like, people kind of just go in, do their thing, and they're walking around town, and it's not really like a big deal at all, which I think is an interesting sort of outcome of the tolerance for it.
Well, it's they didn't make it taboo. I mean, that's the thing. If you don't make anything taboo, you don't really have anything to. People will either do it casually, or I mean, it's not like super highly addictive, but I mean, like it's one of those things where it's like it's just going to be treated as casual, as normal, like. Cigarettes, you know, or I mean, hell, anything. I mean, they used to prescribe that shit.
Right.
Like, it was like, it used to be like, doctors used to be like, you need this. You know what I mean? Like, but I mean, I'm a firm believer, if you don't make anything taboo, you won't have anything to basically rebel against or rebel to. You know what I mean? It's just everything's normal.
Yeah, that's true. Very true.
Yeah.
So, Josh, what kind of work are you doing for Booking?
So I'm on a team right now with some people who handle, I guess you would call it the, like, customer journey, like, throughout different parts of the life cycle. So, you know, after they have, maybe made their first booking, what kind of communication do we send to them? Or, like, ways to really help them, like, find new destinations, ways to sort of, you know, inspire them to want to travel more, that kind of thing. So it's very much focused on trying to come up with new experiences for them and, you know, different ways to sort of inspire them to travel more.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
There's a lot to be done in that realm.
For sure. And it's the first challenge is kind of grasping that concept of, you know, what kind of messaging have they already been trying? And, you know, what's the state of mind of, you know, the people that we're communicating to and that sort of thing. And those are all things that, you know, the rest of the team has a pretty deep understanding of. And it's something that I'm trying to, you know, catch up to right now and learn all of that history just so I can start making sort of decisions or theories on, you know, what I think will work.
How did you even get into UX design?
I guess that kind of came out of when I went to USF in St. Petersburg. I went there for the graphic design program, and there was just one semester, one course focused on web design. So that kind of got me into, that direction, at least, of the design field. And then kind of from there, I just kind of took it on my own. I kind of, you know, ran with that. I definitely kind of was drawn to the web quite a bit more than I was some of the other things that, you know, I was doing in the program, print design, that kind of thing. So I definitely kind of, you know, geared more towards the web. And from there, just kind of evolved out of working at different web agencies, eventually going to some other companies that were more focused on, you know, web applications and software. And from there, just kind of, you know, gradually sort of honing that focus and that emphasis on UX and front-end stuff.
For people that really don't understand what UX is about, could you define what it's about and maybe what it's about for you?
That's a tricky one. I think for me, it always kind of ends up being about, you know, the end user, of course. It's user experience. So I think it's just about finding ways to sort of, you know, solve problems or make something easier for someone, just really a way to make their lives better in some way, or at least sort of enhance their lives through design.
Yeah, I think some companies have a issue where design doesn't mean necessarily opening up Photoshop or Illustrator and making something look pretty. It's that design means solving problems.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of people like to throw around comments, you know, telling designers to make something pretty or, you know, different lines like that, making something pop, whatever it may be. So I think, you know, when you get comments like that, that does sort of get lost. The problem-solving aspect of it gets sort of overshadowed by that kind of idea. So I think it's important for people to remember.
People don't realize, like, they go into something and they go into a site, like, thinking that they want it to look pretty, but they don't realize that there's an underlying beauty and functionality, and your customer only cares about what your website really looks like for, like, the first, what, they're on your homepage for, like, a total of, what was the analytics on that, like, 10 seconds, 13 seconds or something like that, tops. Like, the look of your site only matters for that long. It's about functionality and content. So, you know, if anybody out there is about to build a site, let the beauty of your site, please, for the love of God, be in the functionality of it.
To go into what you're saying, Jonathan, I completely agree. It's not just the look, but it's those kind of decisions that are based on real metrics. An end user might not see or get what they're looking at, but of course is communicated in the background. Whatever the job is to be done gets them through that task. So if your website or your app is to purchase coffee, well, then you're going to need some kind of plan on a quick way for that end user to purchase coffee. So it's all about those kind of tasks and jobs to be done with your app or your website.
I definitely agree. I think, too, with projects like that, that ends up kind of being one of the jobs of the designer is to help educate people on, you know, what those challenges are, because some people will go into a project and not even realize that those are the actual challenges that they're facing. So, you know, sometimes just helping people to identify that kind of stuff, you know, kind of shifts that focus more so away from just being pretty to being functional.
That's why there needs to be a huge focus on UX right at the beginning of a project before it even goes into something like information architecture. You need to have some kind of user research, you need to have some kind of numbers, and you need to have the end user in mind every step of the way, especially at the beginning.
Most definitely.
So, Josh, do you consider yourself more of a UX designer, or do you do some kind of developing also? Are you a hybrid?
I think that up until this recent move, that I would say mostly some kind of a hybrid. Mostly because, you know, a lot of the work that I did before involved quite a bit of UX. I would also be doing, you know, a lot of front-end stuff. The last place that I worked at had their own front-end system that we would help maintain and also add to, adding plugins and different stuff. So, you know, for a while it was a lot of both. What I'm doing now is definitely more focused on the UX side of things than it is, you know, building or maintaining or adding to some kind of code base. So I'm definitely writing a lot less code and focusing more on sort of the intangible parts of my job where, you know, I'm trying to come up with ideas and theories on things and, you know, figure out ways to execute those or implement those and sort of track the results.
If you have the benefit of being a big company, you could have the benefit of having specialists in areas just work on those one things, and then you're going to get an even better end result.
I agree completely, yeah. You know, up until this, I've always worked for much smaller companies, so that was never really, you know, a possibility. So it's really interesting to be part of something so huge that, you know, people do have those specialties. You know, project teams are very focused on specific aspects of, you know, the product. So it's so far been a really great experience, and I still have so much to learn.
Especially if you're somebody that's coming to the industry as a beginner, it's probably a lot easier to get a position if you could wear a lot of different hats, and you don't even have to wear them all well, if you will. If you just know a little bit in all areas, you'll do fine getting a smaller position to start off with. But one of the things when we all kind of further down our career like you're doing is you tend to move into more of a specialist kind of position. Certainly at a bigger company like Booking, you're going to be doing more of a just a UX role, and you're going to be able to put more effort into that specific skill set.
For sure.
So are there any kind of new technologies that you're looking to invest your time in, like for free time? I don't know how much free time you get over there now. I don't imagine you being locked in a cage over in booking.com in Amsterdam, but I don't know what your how much you've explored the town and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the first thing I'll say is they definitely seem to promote a really healthy work-life balance. So I'm definitely not locked in a cage over there. I do have, so far I've had plenty of time to, you know, explore Amsterdam. I'm living in an area just a bit south of there, so I'm able to kind of travel around some other areas. You know, new technology-wise, I haven't really been working on any sort of hobby or freelance projects in quite a little while, especially since this has all been picking up speed, just the preparations for moving and all that kind of stuff. You know, before that, I had a little project I was working on called Lunchtime. We used at the last company I worked for. And it was just a silly little app that I kind of built in my spare time for everybody to sort of coordinate lunch plans. So you would just put up little cards on this page and tell people where you're going to lunch, and people could kind of join you and add their name to the list. So it was a way to like coordinate people to hang out during lunch.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, so that was a pretty cool project. It was, the interesting thing there was I started building the project with Laravel because I wanted to learn that sort of framework. And that was the first time I actually tried to like actually build anything and write PHP code to some like serious degree and actually like, you know, create something functional. So it was a super fun challenge. So I think, you know, any side projects or stuff that I'll do in the future will probably be more like that, just to sort of fill in the gaps of maybe stuff I don't do as much anymore at work, just to kind of keep that balance of things. Because I do definitely enjoy getting my hands dirty and, you know, writing code.
Yeah, that stuff's always fun. Are you more of like a terminal guy, or are you a CodeKit guy? Are you using a Node Packet Manager?
I have mixed emotions about either direction. I think that I definitely feel safer using an interface or some kind of layer between me and running commands. I will say that the times that I do have to get into terminal, it definitely does feel a bit more powerful because you're able to kind of, you know, spit off some commands and make some stuff happen. It's something that I'm definitely getting used to, having to use it a bit more here also for things. So, you know, I'm somewhere in the middle, I think. I definitely don't dislike terminal. It makes me a little uncomfortable sometimes because there's not that sort of visibility, or at least a representation of what I've been doing in terminal. It's all just sort of commands and text responses. So I'm still kind of getting used to that part of it.
Yeah, I hear you. I think that's why companies like Zurb built some of their own tools for people to be able to feel more comfortable executing things. I don't know if you've used Zurb's framework, but they have a thing called Yeti Launch where it will actually write the commands out for you. So you pull up this little mini interface and it will launch the site. It will watch SaaS, depending if you're using Foundation for Sites, Foundation for Apps, or Foundation for Email. But it's a pretty nice little interface. I think that's an interesting way to go for some companies to do something like that, to have some kind of built-in medium, if you will, between you and the terminal.
Yeah, definitely. I think
anything that makes life easier.
Definitely. So I do think that there is something to say for getting rid of that layer in between also, and sort of learning more about why things work the way they do. Because if you always use some kind of thing that makes it easier for you, you may not always, you know, have the opportunity to kind of learn like why it is the way it is or how it works in a certain way. So I think there's something to be said for learning that too.
Yeah, absolutely. So what kind of tools are you using for UX over there in Amsterdam? Are they employing Sketch? Are they using Azure, Envision, Adobe's new, what is it, DX? What kind of things do you use in your tool set?
I mean, my tool set hasn't really changed. I kind of use the same stuff that I've always used. You know, I use Sublime Text when I'm writing code, you know, on my home computer. Don't really do much with FTP, so that's not really a thing that I'm using there. As far as, you know, interface stuff, it's kind of whatever I want to use. I kind of am going more onto the Sketch bandwagon for now, although since I've always used Photoshop, I'm definitely more comfortable there. But I like how snappy things are with Sketch. It's just really easy to kind of, you know, throw something together. The alignment tools, I think, or some of like the automatic alignment within Sketch is really nice. I get that with Photoshop too, but for some reason, things just feel snappier using Sketch. So kind of like using that lately.
There's a lot of tools as well jumping on the Sketch look and feel. Probably the number one interface building tool right now, as far as I could see.
Yeah, definitely seems to be.
Yeah, and all the plugins are so much fun.
Yeah, definitely.
So what are your plans? Are you going to stay in Amsterdam? Do you foresee that you're going to be working at Booking for the next 10, 20 years?
I mean, it's definitely hard to say. I think that, you know, this company seems like a great company in a lot of ways. They definitely seem to promote growth, promote, you know, really encouraging everybody on their teams to better themselves through, you know, learning more, working with other teams, being more communicative, that sort of thing. So I definitely could see it being a company that I could work at for quite a while, you know, provided everything, you know, works out, of course. I think that, you know, I definitely could see myself being here for quite a long time. I mean, there's so much that I have around me to explore even outside of, you know, the career side of things, that, you know, this is definitely an area that I'm not in a rush to leave.
Yeah, what are some of the cool stuff that you've seen over there that maybe Americans don't know about offhand?
I mean, I think I've spent a lot of time just kind of walking around. For me, especially because being from Florida, I've always been from, you know, smaller towns also, generally speaking. So, you know, when I go through a downtown to me is like one or two blocks that have like two or three pretty good restaurants. So, you know, walking around here, there's so many different like boroughs essentially, in different parts of Amsterdam that have, you know, their own sort of little mini subculture to them. So, you know, just walking around, finding great restaurants, there's parks everywhere, even parts of the city that aren't actually parks look like parks because there's so much plant life and everything around. You know, there's just a lot to see. There's a lot of festivals. There's a lot to do. So it's just so much to discover that it's just sort of exciting being in an area where there's that much going on.
Yeah. I mean, living there must be so interesting. I mean, as far as like, UX design goes and so like that, I'm sure that there's, with the culture there, I'm sure that some of that bleeds into your design. I mean, would you say that's true?
I think so. I think that, I think the biggest cultural challenge for me so far has just kind of been in how I'm communicating with people. So I think ultimately that sort of has an impact on UX because, you know, all the work that I've done up until now is generally targeted at an American audience, and that's not the case anymore. So it's it's really just kind of learning about a different way to communicate. And it's not necessarily a totally different way. It's just like in subtle ways. And I don't even know what those ways are yet. It's something that I'm still trying to like work my way through and learn.
Yeah, you'll have to debrief yourself on that one to go like look at your old work and then look at your old work and then look at your more current and see where the changes have come from.
Definitely,
where they've come into. Yeah, where do you go to clear your head, though, man? I mean, I know Fred generally is working on sites well past work. You know, he's like he's working at home or whatever else he's doing. It's like, where do you go there to clear your head? What's your deal? Where do you recharge?
I mean, I'm pretty introverted in a lot of ways. So, you know, generally my tendency is to actually just sort of go home and kind of, you know, think about the day or whatever it is, maybe pick up on some stuff or research something that was, you know, causing me problems earlier in the day. But I'm actually trying to sort of resist that tendency and spend a bit more time out and about because, you know, I can't really bring myself to just rush home straight from the office now in a city like this. So my recharge now has kind of lately been coming from just sort of like sitting at a cafe or getting dinner and just kind of spending time to myself because I'm, you know, don't really know anybody here yet. So I have plenty of time to myself, even though I'm surrounded by people everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's like that's my go-to too. I'm like, I really want to just go home and write, or I want to go home and just do something that I like to do, pull a video game or something like that. So it's, yeah. I get that. But I mean, even here, Sarasota is a beautiful place, man. There's a lot of stuff that you could go out and do, but I mean, like, it's definitely not Europe. I mean, if I was in Amsterdam, I don't know if I could justify, like, I'd have to bring a laptop with me everywhere I went, but like, I would have to go out.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's kind of part of it too, because like there's, you know, when I lived in other cities in Florida, my tendency was, of course, just go straight home. And that's not to say that it's because there wasn't anything happening there, but that was just how it kind of always was for me. Like I would be drained and I'd want to go home and stuff like that. But then now I kind of find
20
myself
20 plus years anywhere.
Yeah.
20 plus years anywhere and you're going to get tired of it. You know the streets, like you know the palm trees, you know everything that there is to know. It's like going into a new place is, I know, going into a new place is so, I would say probably like for, even for me, but I'm a creative type, is like so invigorating. It's like it's fresh and new.
Yeah, exactly.
To me, it seems like it must be like that part in Kiki's Delivery Service where you jumped on your broom and you're like, oh, fuck this place, and you're going to this new town and you get to live on top of the place where they make the cheese.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's I call it aerial syndrome. To go back to Disney again, it's like look at this stuff, isn't it neat? You know what I mean? Like it's like all this like, and it's like you've seen streets before, fucker. Like it's just cobblestone. It's just cobblestone, but it's not just cobblestone. It's fucking cobblestone. You know what I mean? Like that's the thing. It's like you're there. You can touch it. Like if you're in a picture, you can kind of just like give it a throwaway. You know, you're like, ah, fuck it. It's just whatever. The streets are dark. It looks dank. And then you get there, and it's like, oh, it's like you could just, I don't know, some people aren't like attuned to that? Like, I'm not attuned to like spiritual things. Like, there's so many people that are like, oh my god, did you feel that? I feel like there's a ghost behind us. I'm like, nah man, it feels like Tuesday. But like, you put me in a city with culture, and I'm like, I am that person that's like a straw to like the city's water. Like, I am just drinking the shit out of it. I love it.
Yeah, I would just be going to every kind of landmark and taking selfies and pulling strangers into my photos and taking pictures and publishing on Facebook.
Yeah,
I'd be fucking about that.
Right. I mean the touristy areas I have to go to, but like, I am that person who, like, even if I'm in a touristy town, I want to find the first like local person I can find that looks cool or looks like they're doing some shit and go, where do you guys go to avoid me? Like, that's where I want to be. Like, those are the places that I want to hang out. That's the culture that I want to get. I want to get like everyday life in this touristy fucking town. You know what I mean? That's what I like.
Yeah, for sure. I'm trying to do similar things with some people from the office and just pick their brains on, you know, where are fun restaurants and fun spots and areas and stuff like that.
So how was it, and was it difficult to kind of give a break or a separation to your connections here and just take everything you own and move across the world?
It was a weird experience. I mean, I think that when I agreed to do this, I didn't really realize all of the little differences or little things that kind of would come along with that. You know, one of the strangest things for me was always, you know, this sort of nostalgia that I have for things. So, you know, I've had, you know, a couple of boxes that I've moved with me since I graduated college and moved out to college to begin with. So, you know, almost a decade ago, or actually over a decade ago now. So it got to the point this time where, you know, I'm not going to, you know, be spending all this money on storage costs for all this stuff. So I need to get rid of quite a bit of my things.
Sure.
So that, you know, opened up a whole process of, you know, what do I value? What do I want to hold on to? And why do I want to hold on to it? And making these decisions and making these choices to let things go and that kind of stuff. Even if it is, you know, just some small personal thing, it does have, you know, some kind of meaning or memory associated with it. And, you know, if you've had stuff for so long, you know, getting rid of it's not always the easiest thing. So, you know, going through that process was definitely really interesting. I think it also kind of, you know, started making other things set in a bit more about the, you know, the impact of the choice to move and some of the other things that come along with that, you know, starting essentially a whole new life over here. And also trying to sort of like maintain communication with people has definitely been an interesting challenge.
Yeah, especially if you're an introvert, because like, yeah. I don't even like, I barely call my parents, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. I love my parents, like, yeah. It's like, I love them to death. I never talk. I'm like, I'll go over and I'll be like, well, it's like, I try and find things to do to make myself reach out to those people. It's like, yeah. You know, Fred knows, like, it's like, I'm that friend that's like, I care about you. I don't have any love loss for you. It's like, but my calling people or checking in is so sporadic. And sometimes it's horrible to the point of like, are we friends anymore? I'm like, yeah, why would you think that?
I'm definitely the same in a lot of ways. So it's been, you know, yet another thing that is, you know, something to sort of adapt to. But yeah, I definitely agree. I'm kind of the same way. I'll go ages without talking to people and kind of just be able to pick back up like it, you know, never happened.
Yeah, nothing changes. Well, Josh, man, we appreciate you coming on. We appreciate your the commercials in which that your company puts out and the user experience. Now when I float on that site, I'll be able to be like, oh, I wonder if Josh Story had a part in this shit. But thanks, man, for coming on. We appreciate it a lot. And then, you know, hopefully this isn't the last time. Maybe you get a, you know, something else you want to bring to the table. You give us a call back and come back on.
Cool, man. Yeah, definitely.
All right, buddy. Well, thank you.
Well, thanks for having me, guys.
Come on, Artex. What's the matter? What's wrong? Come on, boy. What's the matter? I understand. It's too difficult for you.
Artax! You're sinking! Come on! Turn around! You have to now! Come on! Artax! Fight against the sadness, Artax! Artax, please. You're letting the sadness of the swamps get to you. You have to try. You have to care. For me. You're my friend. I love you.